Welcome to another episode of I Call Top Bunk. We are here on location in Vista, California.
Beautiful Vista.
And we are in Joey Bradford's studio, the Vibratorium. And, you know, he's being gracious enough to let us just hang out here all week and do podcasts, which is cool. And this episode is the gracious and ever-talkative Cove Reber from Seozin and Dead American. We have been friends for long time, and he was just a joy to talk to.
Yeah, the best.
And he was very forthcoming. And yeah, we hope you guys enjoy the episode as much as we enjoy talking to him. And without further ado, here's Cove Reber.
We're in it, dude. We're ready.
Didn't do anything, you know what I mean? But there's a way to, like, we could, you know, I think, like, showing behind the scenes of, like, us hanging out shooting, like, the promo shots that we just did, like, all of that stuff, like, that's like comedy gold, you know?
Totally.
But at the same time, it's like, even just showing little clips of it, making some cool little reel that's like a 15-second clip of all of us like smiling, having fun, like being goofy, laughing, like,
dude, people just hungry hippos that stuff.
They just, they're like, they just want to see it.
Yeah.
And we're not like the best dudes. Like I'm like Michaela, our good friend and Dead American's like
photographer
manager, you know, like she helps out with everything like that. Like her and I, she'll attest to this. Like you see these like TikTok clips and stuff. And like, I'm just not the guy who's like, hey guys, like I used to be in this band and then, you know, I'm in this band. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm not that dude.
You'll never be that guy.
I'll never be that dude. I hate that. I hate like having to go posts, and I hate having to like sit and take the time to like write something out to describe it. Right. It's like,
it's not genuine.
No.
That's
contrived.
That's fascinating though, because I credit Seozin as one of the, you guys were one of the first bands to ever live stream recording a record at Hurley.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you guys were utilizing social media.
Yeah.
At the very dawn of what we now are just regular everyday things, but you guys were the first in to my perspective to ever do that kind of stuff. So that's wild that you're like, I'm not really into that kind of stuff. Who was driving that? Was it just a band like, oh, that sounds cool, let's just do it?
No, that simple? I think that was definitely Chris driving the whole thing. Like Seotv and Seotv. And
do you guys want to do a stupid ass little intro real quick and then just keep going?
No, we're gonna do an intro.
We could do an intro afterwards.
We can just say, I turned on the mics mid.
Okay, back to Seotv.
We were in a conversation. I think Chris was like the brainchild of everything. That was like, how do we do more and use the technology at our hands, you know what I mean? Like he definitely had that vision. And I think at that time it was like us and Under Oath that were doing anything of like significant value online. Right. Like Under Oath was doing some pretty cool shit.
Early 2000s. You didn't have as much at your disposal.
Yes, so it's harder.
But it was a couple. Yeah. 2005, 2006. It was just a couple of like creative dudes that were like, all right, how can we like figure this out? And then how can, like, I saw what they did and how can we do, you know, in our own way and figure it out. Chris had that thought, and then the whole second record we had intended to just do it ourselves, and then that record was a mess. But dude, Hurley was like,
In Search of Solid Ground.
That fucking record slams.
I love that record.
Yeah, that, what is it, 12 out of 13 of that record are pretty tight. Basically, like, at Hurley was tight because, and the way that even we ran Hurley, the way that the band was like doing those sessions and like when to turn on the audio, when to turn off the audio, like when to turn the video on, when to turn it off. Like, it, what was really fun was like during that time, I had like this list, and I still have everybody's emails. I should just shoot it out and see if like people respond.
Hey guys,
but it was like we had this whole little like club of like people, because there was a message board underneath it.
That's right.
And it was like you could every time that you signed in, you had to use, you like created a username.
Yeah.
But that username wasn't like saved. So as soon as you were off, somebody could jump back on as you and be like, oh, I'm this guy still, and I'm still here talking. It was like really kind of
2004,
like
2004.
So like early on. And so it became this thing where like I got everybody's emails. And so at like weird times, I would just be up listening to these songs and riffs that I'm like, how the fuck am I going to sing over this shit? And I would just get on and I'd send out these emails. And I'd be like, I'm signed in under this. And so we'd jump on and there'd be like 30 of us at like 4 a.m. just like chatting up and like having a good time talking about like what's happened, what's happening tomorrow, you know, like all this shit. So we utilized like the internet and those at that time. We try to take advantage of it, but I don't even think, even if they were to have continued that, it never would have become something that was like that, like where we were like doing these types of TikTok type of videos, because that just wasn't us like that.
That's a,
you know,
totally different thing.
Totally different thing.
Being a fly on the wall, watching you guys work and be a band is wildly different than making a purpose content for consumption on cell phones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of the social media aspect and utilizing technology, I want to rewind because I am so curious on how you sent in, presumably, a demo tape or an audition tape. And did you email first? Like, what was the process of Seosin needs a singer. How do you even hear about this? Like, well, how did that work back then?
So there was a show that they were doing in San Diego at Soma. They were supposed to go on tour with like Story of the Year, Mike Hem.
Wow.
And like a couple, there this was is a like couple
2004?
More. 2004?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, end of 2003. It was end of 2003, because that's the tour that Anthony was like, see ya.
Yeah, yeah.
And just halfway through his flights to California, just turned back around and went back home. so I think, Joseph. So I think like, at that time, I knew that they had canceled that tour, but I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really care enough why to like look into it. And so about 4 months passed and I'm sitting in my English class and the kid next to me was like, you know that, I was like singing a melody and he was like, you know that Anthony quit, right? And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, Anthony quit. So I just,
what?
I raised my hand.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
I went straight up. I was like, hey, Miss Erickson, that was her name. She was a kindergarten teacher before, like, for 20 years. And then she decided my junior year to teach seniors and juniors. So she would, like, have nap time and shit. And we'd bring pillows and she would just read, like a Hamlet to us and shit. It was like super weird.
It's kind of nice though.
And it was super nice to be right before lunch and then we just leave. But I just raised my hand. It was like, I didn't bring anything to class. She was like, hey, you can go to the bathroom. Went to my car and then just bolted it off campus and like typed up an email to Bo and he responded pretty quickly.
So fucking, you just literally got on it. Like the second
second I heard it, I was like, oh, like game over. Like I knew then that they were from Orange County and I was like, that's 40 minutes tops.
Up to this point, were you singing on your own? Were you recording anything at that time? Like, what was your day to day?
So, I mean, at that time it was just high school, and high school, my senior year, it was like, I was 18 the whole year my whole senior year. So I could just leave whenever I wanted to. And they would always kind of harass you on the way out, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't want to be here.
I'm an adult, and I'm going home.
I'm going to go home, dude. And they ended up, I ended up, like, working a job, like, doing pizza delivery that year. And then I got into, I missed so many classes that they were like, you can't miss any more than two classes.
Whoa.
And so I had to like finish my senior year just like being very on top of it. And but yeah, I wasn't doing anything other than being in a band with Joey.
Oh, what's that?
Joey Bradford from the East is here, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry. Yeah. Joey and I were in like a high school band, a little pop punk band called Mormon in the Middle.
Mormon in the Middle.
Yeah. Amazing.
And it like I look back on that band and realize like we had really good song structure. So I knew how to write a song and how to like
phrasing,
verses, like, yeah. The choruses need to be like, you know, bigger than verses, and you tell stories in verses.
Yeah, the blueprint for how to do it.
Yeah, I knew. You know, growing up, we all grew up listening to like really good, well-written songs. I mean,
you're surrounded by it.
Yeah,
Southern California, right?
Absolutely.
So
I mean, even his older brother, Joey's older brother, is like a legend to, you know,
yeah,
all of us.
You touched on that last time we were here a little bit.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Could you keep it down, dude?
Dude.
Come on, bro.
All right, so Mormon in the Middle.
That was my thing. But yeah, so getting back to Seosin, basically like with talking to Bo is like, no, I don't want to try out any more people in person. Like, it's been a train wreck and it's not worth your time or mine. And I was like, no, it definitely is, but I'll send in a demo, send me your address. And so,
do you have instrumental tracks or something to sing to?
No, I played shitty acoustic guitar.
I love it.
Yeah, so I set up a microphone in a jar, like a shitty $50 microphone. Yeah, bro, into my dad's PC and recorded it on like Fruity Loops or some shit. And
shout out
the
to
whole
Fruity
time,
Loops.
The fucking funniest part is like, shout out to Fruity Loops.
Dude,
for sure.
They still slam.
The whole time I was like, it was like this. With the acoustic and the hole and me singing over like this, it was an absolute nightmare. But I had like strep throat,
but that's
tonsillitis,
that's a testament
and like
to
all
how
these things
you were going
too.
For it though,
bro. But I was just I have to do this now.
You're not being
because
stopped.
If I don't do it now, like somebody's gonna get in before
right.
me, because you know we're in like the spot, like there's fucking singers everywhere, you know, they'll find somebody. And so I just sent it in, wrote my name, my first name, just Cove, and my phone number to my family's landline. And bro,
yeah, dude, 2004.
Yeah, so they called me. They called me like with like 3 months left of my
senior
year.
How long after you sent that in? They give you a call.
Probably like a 3 weeks.
So you just didn't
two
sleep.
3 weeks.
So you're just hanging out, just kind of waiting.
I'm just hanging out, thinking like, you know,
there's no way.
There's a stack of CDs, you know,
sure.
ahead of me, and I'm like, there's no way.
That's
you know?
A good question though. Were they honing in on anybody else? Like, were they shopping around and like landing on anybody else? Or was it like?
I don't think they were landing on anybody else because they just didn't. They didn't like.
They knew what they didn't want, but they didn't know.
Yeah, it's like they just knew.
Yeah.
I think when you if you're like trying to find that guy, you're like immediately you're like, all right, first impression. Like, was it cool to be around this person?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, sometimes you can weed people out a little bit quicker. And I think that me being so young was like, oh, there's an opportunity here. You know,
to mold this dude.
He's not like annoying. He's like a good kid from a good
He's a good
family.
Mormon child.
Yeah, a good little Mormon child.
Yeah.
Like, and they called me like with 3 months left of my senior year, and my mom, I'm like outside doing yard work or some shit, and my mom calls me and she goes, hey, there's a guy named Chris on the phone. He says he's in a band called Seosin. And I like ran around my house just like screaming. Like
two fists in the air,
no
dude.
Way.
Yeah,
it's like my moment, you know. And I get to the phone, and I'm all out of breath and shit. And I'm like, "What's up, dude?" He's like, "Are you just like running around your house.
I was just waiting, dude.
I was like, no, dude, don't worry about
like
that.
He's like literally listening to you, like, yeah, what the hell?
Just freak out, like, ah, I guess it goes around the house. But he was like, yeah, we want you to come up and try out. So I went up, and like Joey was saying earlier, I was like dressed the wrong way. So Joey like tried to like fix me a little bit. You
know? The picture. What did you choose first, though?
Oh, bro, I was like a pop punk kid. I
hell yeah.
Famous Stars and Straps and like Yellow Card and like Starting Line green t-shirts.
Where's the
and
problem?
Shit.
It sounds great.
It's fantastic.
Sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, that was definitely high school coat.
I wore that yesterday, literally everything.
Yeah. Bright colored t-shirts and shit. Yeah. Out of control.
And so Joey dressed you in.
So Joey dressed me like, I don't know. He like threw me like a t-shirt with the collar on it, you know, with some stripes on it or some shit.
Oh yeah.
And I had like a white belt on, you know, just like my moon shoes, the Osiris moon shoes.
The moon shoes, yeah, the bro. Big ones are like this wide.
Yeah, the huge ones.
Yeah.
And so I went up and just like met them and tried out. And
so you actually jammed with them, like.
Yeah, we did. You know, the EP in a practice space, and they were like, we were kind of hanging out, and I'm all quiet in the corner, like, what the fuck
is
like,
going on? Yeah.
I thought Bo was Justin, and Justin was Bo. Like, I didn't know who anybody
you
in the band
back
was.
Then. Like, there was
no photos. There's
Facebook
no,
to log into, and like, you know, it was like what the dawn of MySpace.
Yeah, it was bonkers. So I definitely. I think just the whole overall vibe of that day, it was like, okay, you know, we'll call you. And then they the whole vibe was cool. It wasn't like, it was definitely like nervous kid meeting like some idols, you know, like they were all older, you know, like people I would have looked up to as a freshman in high school, you know, going to battle with bands, being like, the seniors rule, that band ripped.
And this wasn't
band of
a
all
garage
time.
Band. Obviously, they've been doing stuff, and they're translating the name EP, and they've been playing these
exploded.
Crazy shows.
Yeah, exploded. And it just, there was all this hype surrounding it. And so when I came in, it was definitely a learning experience as far as like, how to, and this is why I hate social media and why I feel like Salesman would have never become that like cool TikTok band, is because the amount of like, I don't want to say hate, because it wasn't hate, it was just like comments that made me question like, am I really the guy?
The amount of criticality, like everyone's just being super critical of you.
Yeah, like hyper.
You don't know anything about that.
No, I don't know
at all. Not at all.
No.
It was like, it was nuts. So I didn't really pay attention too much to it, because to me, it was never like, at the time, I'm filling these crazy shoes, but it was never filling these crazy shoes to me. It was like, I just need to go out there and like be me, you know, like I got to do myself.
You were trying to be the best form.
Yeah, you do.
Right? You were,
I got to do myself.
You were trying to be the best version of you. You weren't trying to copy what Anthony had done.
Yeah, I love what Anthony did, but
course.
I knew, and at that time, you know, as well as I do now, that I'm not that dude. Like, I don't have that dude's voice. Like, if he were sitting here saying all this same stuff, like, our tones are just...
wildly different.
Wildly different, you know? And so I knew that it was just about like, how do I showcase myself? And that took 2 years to complete with the first record being done. Like it took a while to figure it out. So after, you know,
by that
out,
you mean like finding, like what my singing students, we call it like finding your true voice. Like people can sing, but it's like, what do I sound like and what should I sound like are two fucking completely different things.
Yeah. Well, I knew from singing in a choir my entire youth, my, you know, in a church, like I'll say it like this, like you're never going to hear a whole choir of like honky tonk, like voice. You know right. what I'm saying? Like if you get like 50 country singers in a room and you're like, this is my choir, I need you guys to sing this song, it's not going to come out with that twang.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like yeah. their voices are going to be like more catered to being a choir, you know? And to me, right. that's like your true voice. That's you just singing and, you know, making sure that you're sure. hitting certain harmonies yeah, yeah. and notes and you're not like performing, you know, right. a performance is, and this is something that the first record taught me is like when you're recording, it's more about capturing the performance than it is like
the vocal performance
singing
for sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we're a rock and roll band. You're not Mariah Carey. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying to do these crazy vocal runs.
There's a lot of wiggle room in rock, right?
Bro, like, yeah, it's, there's a lot of wiggle room in rock, and I feel like the performance is definitely the key aspect. But that I knew how to separate those two
from the get-go. Yeah.
From the get-go, yeah. Just because of like
I think having that choral experience and then being in a band, you're like, ooh, I can separate these two.
Yeah, I can sing like that and do these harmonies. I've now learned how to sing these harmonies mm-hmm. and do these right. things. Now it's about performing that, and do I perform the harmony, or do I just like let the harmony be that like mm-hmm. Almost like a pad, you know what I'm saying? Like there's a whole like
yeah
I don't know different like a whole bunch of things that you could do vocally on songs, but that's not what we're talking about.
Like, no, I get what you mean. The right tone, the right timbre for the vocal structure you're trying to for sure.
So you send this tape in, they call you jam. I would love to get a sense of what was happening between that point and then the first record, the first full length, the Beatle record. Like, do you guys immediately start writing songs? Do you just go out and play a bunch of shows to get you comfortable? Like, what happens?
So there was like all these little tryouts that they made me do. So we did that first. It was like, cool, you passed the like first vibe check. Come to Bo's studio next week. And let's like, you know, record a song. And I was like, oh fuck. It's like nervous. What do I do?
Yeah,
what do I
do?
But they had a plan, and you know, the plan was we're gonna re-record this song that we did with Anthony with you, just to see how you sound.
See how it goes.
Vocally, you know. And so we did that song. I passed that test, and then they were like, all right, cool. So we got Warped Tour coming up, and I was like already planning on going, you know, like Taking Back Sundays playing.
Of course.
Yellow Cards playing. Like all of my favorite bands that I want to see are playing. And so I'm like, I get to play Warped Tour for like 14 days? Hell yeah. And so we go out on that. Little did I know, another Seosin test, you know, can he hang on tour? Like, what's he like to be in a van with?
Long-term. Is
he
like arguably like the greatest test?
Yeah, it's the biggest. It's literally like the biggest test that you have to pass, because you get out there and you're like sweaty. It's 120 degrees. You're stuck in a van. There's no like cool place to chill. You smell. How are you taking care of yourself?
You're hangry.
Yeah, you're hangry. Yeah. You're like broke.
Hella PTSD right now.
Yeah, right.
It was definitely something that I look back on and I'm like, I wish I could have sang the whole thing. But having Phil be the guy who was singing the entire set except for the song that we recorded, for me was like, okay, cool. I get to take Warped Tour and I get to do what I've always wanted to do as a fan going to Warped Tour. Mm-hmm. I get to go stand side stage.
It's a lottery, dude.
And watch like all of my favorite bands and like learn how to become a singer. Cause day one of Warped Tour, I go, I've never like played a show just holding a microphone. And they were like, what?
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, dude. I was like, what do I do? And they're like, just jump in the crowd. I was like, all right.
That's what they said?
Yeah, they're just like, jump in the barricade.
I love
so the
it,
whole time I'm like on the barricade, in the barricade, just like losing
just
my mind.
Just sending it the first time. I love it though.
Bro.
Yeah.
It was a trip. And that Warped Tour, passing that, like,
and
the,
what
can
year is
he
this?
Do this?
This is
2004.
Yeah, and Phil Snead from Story of the Year was filling on vocals.
Yeah, Phil was filling on the vocals and playing with Story of the Year. And again, like, I'm going to see Story of the Year, like, watching Dan, like, learning, like, all right, how do I, like, act cool on stage just holding a microphone?
Oh, dude, that guy's the
epitome. Am I
going to
be, like, the flippy flip guy like Dan? Or am I going to be, like, the swinging guy? Or, like, what kind of guy am I going to be? Who am I, you know?
You kind of developed your own thing, though. Like...
I think,
if I may say so, like, you have this, like, cool, like, lumbering, like, stare thing that you do that I'm like, I fucking dig that. No, you're just fucking locked in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
there's times where I'm like, dang, did I, like, come across, like, angry tonight? Because I'm not an angry person.
I think people
person.
Who probably haven't seen you think that, but people who, like, are avid Seosin goers, they're like, he's just fucking,
classic
he's fucking locked in, dude. Having a great time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think now it's like so much because so much time has passed. It feels more natural than it did back then. If that makes any sense.
Totally.
Like it just,
yeah,
it now I'm like, I think after learning and realizing stepping away from the music industry and being able to, like, sidelines for a while, I can, like, look back and be like, that was really, really cool. But because I wasn't able to, like, live within those moments that were happening because it was all happening so fast, like,
yeah,
now I'm able to, like, just relax and be like, be more of myself, I guess, you know.
I think that was really a moment in time for all of you guys. I remember my former teeny tiny little band won a contest to play Taste of Chaos, and you guys,
hell yes,
and the first year of Taste of Chaos, you guys drove up and you joined the tour on the Washington date. No one knew how to pronounce your name, no one knew how to anything.
No.
And I was side stage with Bert from the Used.
Yep.
And we were all passing a bottle of wine and we were watching this Zeosin band. We're not really sure, but you guys wrecked everybody. You guys were mind blowing. I'm literally getting goosebumps thinking about
the show
right now.
That's awesome.
But you guys did have a swagger and you guys had a confidence by then, by 2005. We're skipping ahead a year, but
yeah.
The full length what hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So I think that was another year, like what, 2006? Ish
2006, yeah.
You guys were just touring a lot,
only off the EPs. Like that's something
only
we said too.
EPs.
Like,
yeah, we had seven
fucking
songs.
Losing
so
their minds
your
over
head
like,
was like the thing that we could go and see
song.
You.
Yeah,
it was. We only had seven songs to play. It was like we would go out on and tour, and once we started doing, I could tell Barrier Head was kind of like roughly already there.
Yeah.
And so we started working on that song, and that song had like, dude, I have spools of just different variations of that song.
Lyrically and melodically and...
Just all the different demos. Like I would go up to Bose, track something new, and then get a new bounce, and I'd drive home listening to it the whole time. Put it on
we're going
to
play those right now.
Is that why some of the EP versions of some of the songs are different than the actual full-length Secrets?
Yeah,
Secrets, for example. Because we would always, as a consumer and as a fan, we would always get these EPs and then learn them religiously, and then the full length would come out, and then
it'd be different.
It'd be
like,
different.
Oh, shit.
Be different.
Like, wait, what?
We did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was like more Seosin tests. Like we could have just. I think for the Black EP, we needed to put something out for 2006 Warped Tour. We didn't have any new music out. We needed to like make some, you know, hard copies to sell at Warped Tour for $5. So I think that's more of the purpose of the EPs. It was like, all right, we got these demos ready. Let's just see what people think of these like demos that we got.
And you were live testing record. The music as well and kind of refining.
Yeah, we were live testing one or two of them.
Sure.
You know, to see, catch vibes and see what's up and be able to go back home and maybe play a headlining set with all of the demos that we have, you know, make a little bit more money to go into the studio with.
Right.
But that whole time period was just like a blur because I'm 19 years old. We're all living together in an apartment in Orange County.
Wait, how many dudes in one apartment?
Well,
more than two? Yuck.
Five.
Ooh.
Two in each room. Holy each room shit. Had a bathroom.
Holy shit.
There was five of us, and I wasn't there the whole time, but I was there a lot. And I had a little like nook in the corner by the heater, of which I like burned myself many, many times. That had just a pad on the ground that I'd sleep on. And then Bo Bocan moved in from Bless the Fall.
Wow.
He like moved in and slept on the couch. And so me and Bo had the living room to ourselves. So there was six of us living there. I think at one point there was like eight people living in this house. It was wild. Wild times. So we were getting stuff done, but we didn't necessarily know who was going to produce it and who was going to like be able to be the referee. Like we all knew we needed a referee.
Now you're talking about the full length?
For the full length. Yeah, we all knew like a referee is like literally the description that we used. Like we need somebody to referee this because
so you guys
there's
had
too
signed
many
by this point.
Too many fucking
we signed a Capitol pretty much like right after I joined.
Right.
It was like, all right, we're meeting with the last label. And
did
I think
you,
it was Capitol, and we took a meeting.
Did you finish high school or did you just bounce?
Oh, I finished high school. I graduated. Okay. I pushed out a tier to Miss Erickson for not doing any homework the whole year. And was like, I worked so hard on my senior presentation because I failed my senior
Shout
presentation.
Out to Miss Erickson.
Bro, Miss Erickson time. Was like, you know what? I have to basically give you like an A on all the homework you didn't turn in the whole year in order to pass you. Okay. And so she just like, you know, pushed out a tear and So I graduated, but
barely.
But
it's time to go be in a band.
Yeah. I didn't want to do anything else in high school. Like I didn't play sports, but I was friends with everybody and we would just go to shows and put on our own shows at like house parties. And like, we had this barn that we would go put on shows at in high school. It was fucking wild. It was so crazy.
Barn shows, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. I love barn shows.
It was so epic.
So you signed.
So we signed to Capitol.
And it's time to work on the full length.
Yeah.
And you guys are working on what is still an incredible batch of songs. I've always wondered and wanted to ask you, do you remember the frame of mind you were in when you were writing some of these songs lyrically or recording? Is it a time machine or is it more like, so Anthony once told me he feels like he's covering someone else's songs because the early sales and stuff was so long ago. It doesn't seem like, because he's so far removed from that person that he was then.
I can totally understand that. And I think my perspective is slightly different. I don't feel like it was somebody else. I wouldn't describe it in that regard. I think I remember more of the writing and recording process than I do the actual like touring. Cause we toured for two and a half years off of the first record. So the touring was just like
straight too, right?
Go, 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 go. You know, it was like over 300 days of touring a year.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
Yuck.
So the times that I enjoy recording more than I enjoy playing shows. Playing shows is great. There's There's no way to describe it, and there's no way to get that feeling doing anything
else.
There's
such intrinsically different experiences, though. Like, because I'm with you. I love playing a show, but I love, like, getting with some dudes who love to make cool shit and be like, yo, we have a bunch of stupid-ass ideas that's going to make one great idea.
Yep.
And let's do it.
Yeah. Let's go hard on these. Totally. You know, and make it. Make it something that is, it's like making a delicious stew, you know? You don't want to be the, like, cook in the kitchen who's just throwing, like, too much salt.
Too much salt is a bad thing.
Yeah. But to your point, though, if you're writing, when you're writing for the first record, are you thinking of the live show and like, okay, well, I got to do this.
No.
Or you're just completely focused in that moment and making the song the best it can be. And you're going to concern yourself with what parts am I going to do live later?
Facts.
Yeah. Okay.
So
that's an interesting question, not to interrupt you, because when I am in the studio, or when we were in the studio, I would have to think about that.
That's exactly.
Because I'm like, oh shit, this sounds really cool, but can we fucking do this live? And I love that you didn't even think about that. You're like, nope, yeah, this sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, I know. To me, like, there's a massive difference between playing live and what's on record.
The record you're capturing the best of. That's the painting, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, that's exactly. That's the finished painting. That's the most beautiful version of this that you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is what... Like, none of my live performances are going to carry in this, like, the weight that first record did.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's, you're creating a polished sound for the listener's ear. Like,
forever.
It's going to live forever. And that to me is like, in those moments, like, don't, if anything, like, why would you hold back? Like, unless it's called for, like,
yeah,
and that's where the referee part comes in. It's like you need somebody who can see the end and the painting and help you paint it.
So that's a good segue. So enter
Howard Benson.
Enter Howard.
Yeah. So we went with Howard Benson, and Bo and I didn't know this until like going into the studio, but Bo has like the biggest crush on Benson, Chris Lord-Alge at that time. He was just like, oh, these are totally the top, you know?
And they were at the top of their games at that time.
It like
American Idiot, Three Cheers for Sweet, you know, like
Blindside, Silence. I will go on record saying that, and that Bo said this, and I agree, that record is one of the best sounding records of all time.
Agreed.
Like that record is sonically, it like melted my brain when I saw Silence for the first, like the music video on a TV for the first time. I was like, who is this band? Are you kidding me? Like, I gotta figure out how and who and where, you know.
That's what happened.
Maybe stoked.
That's what happened when I was in California. I was like 17 visiting my brother, and he lived in Orange County. That's what happened when you guys popped on Fuse. I was hungover and I woke up and was like, what the fuck is that? Turn that up to 1,000. Who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah.
Like, what? So relatable.
Yeah, that, I mean,
this child is with his soaring vocals.
Mm-hmm.
It's that fucking Black and White video. I was like,
but you're heavy without being metal.
What the fuck is happening?
And you had this crazy melody thing, and like these, like it was such a unique thing. Like I'd never had that sandwich before. Like I want more.
Yeah, dude.
That's how I felt about translating. That, you know, that whole EP was like, I don't know why I love this so much.
Dude, I don't think anybody did. They're like, what this? Yeah. We don't know what this is.
Yeah.
Turn it up.
Yeah.
I was like, Mom.
Mom,
do you think this is a boy or a girl singing right now? It's a boy. I could sing this high. And I would sing stuff to her. It like that, I don't know. That whole time of just the music that I was listening to leading up to writing the first record was just like, I loved everything that was top 40 that sounded, you know, rock and roll, as well as like the more you know, Warped Tour friendly pop punk bands, was just like everything that I loved. And then it started to get a little heavier when Thrice came out.
Totally.
And when Seosin came out, I felt like more bands were like, okay, you can sing and still play these like heavy riffs and let's just go a little bit heavier than what this is. Take all those song structures and just push it into a heavier.
You guys definitely had realm. The algorithm.
Oh, dude. Totally. Like, Bo had the algorithm.
Landed on something special, dude.
Yeah. Bo knew with where to place certain riffs and how to kind of,
dude,
uniquely lift a riff and make it unique to himself. Bo has a very cool way of like hearing things and the way he plays and writes riffs is like very unique to him specifically.
He's like this is a weird comparison, but he's like the Chris Martin of Coldplay of fucking rock. Because Chris Martin literally they're so calculated. It's literally like an equation for the human ear. They measure out the consonants, mm-hmm. the dissonance, the BPM, the fucking key, where to put those little riffs, how to have them metered. Like, my friend and I used to sit down, Sean Tift, and get really baked and be mm-hmm. like, all right, we're going to play this song and write out, the times when this stuff happens.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to play this song, and it would be, the same shit. I'm like, these dudes have a fucking formula.
Yeah.
These songs are completely intrinsically different.
Yeah.
But they're, the same.
Yeah, Bo was just on a different level at that time, I feel like he knew musically what the band should be and would be and where it was going.
That's so important to have that driver of the ship, because not a lot of bands these days have that. Everyone's co-writing for bands. There's a few that are like, yeah, we just write all our own shit. But that's really rare these days.
Well, I mean, at that time it was just Pride. I feel like every band was doing
Ride
that
the Pride
at that time. So,
for
us, it we were kind of unique in that when Chris joined the band, Bo, I don't know. By the time I joined the band, Chris had already inserted himself into Bo's world.
Sure.
So writing that record, it became like, I've got two guys that I've got to go work with, you know, on Bo's songs, I'm going to go work with Bo and we're going to write songs. And then I'm going to go work with Chris on Chris's songs. And Bo would get Chris's songs and then make them.
Bo Wiseman.
Yeah. Bo's version.
Bo Wiseman.
Yeah.
I never knew that. I didn't know it was two little.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Different warehouses of hits that you guys would.
Oh yeah, go just listen to the first two records. You can definitely tell what.
So when you joined, Chris wasn't really a part of it yet, or
no? Chris had already inserted himself in that world. They had already written what became Come Close, but was
it was called yes. I want to play a hair fast or something. No.
Come Close was an Anthony. Was an Anthony demo.
Wait, what? I didn't know that.
Yeah, on. I remember. Oh, hold on, it's escaping me. We'll find it later. But I didn't know what you're talking about. And it had a different intro, but
it was slightly different. Right. But that song was a Chris song.
Huh.
You know, there's certain songs that even when I heard. What's the newest record called?
Fuck. What, Along Came a Shadow?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm the worst.
I love it, though.
Along the Shadow, right?
Along the Shadow.
Okay. When Along the Shadow came out, I listening to that record for me was like, oh, there's a Chris song. There's a Chris part. There's
That's
a
so amazing.
Part. Yeah.
Yeah. I can kind of pick out where, who wrote what, who inserted, who started the idea. And I think that it's, fans their overall vibe when it's complete is insane.
Agree.
Because it doesn't. They both come from these different worlds and different perspectives of how to write songs, and that, again, first record needed a referee in that, like, we needed somebody to help be like, that's it, you know,
stop that move. Let's,
yeah, we've decided
put a fork in that.
Yeah, we've decided that's good, move on.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's yes. So integral in the process too, to having somebody be like,
because if you're too close to it, you're, dude, like, you're in the band, and too close,
for me,
go forever.
At 19 years old.
But what if we do this to it?
No, it wasn't. I didn't feel in that place. I was not in that place.
So you're
just
like, whatever you guys want.
Straight up. It was like, I would go do demos, and then I'd bring it back, or Bo would bring it back, you know, and we'd all sit there and listen to it, and it'd be like, nope. Like,
damn.
Okay. Tomorrow we go back in and go back at it again. But, you know, we needed somebody to, because there were so many nopes for me leading into the recording of that record, I needed somebody who was going to help be like Howard was, and just be like, it's finished. Leave it alone.
And kind of pumping you up a little bit.
And, dude, that guy hyped me up so hard.
Yeah.
Like, there were some times in the studio where it was like moments where I needed some, like, serious hype to get shit done.
Yeah.
And luckily Howard was that guy, because if it wasn't him and things that didn't happen the way that they did, that record would have never been what it was.
Yeah.
Never been what it was.
That's as a principal feature of a producer, though. You got it. It's like the coach who's like, you fucking sucked last Friday.
Yeah.
Like, you need to fucking step it up next week. Because he loves you and he wants you to fucking crush. Yeah.
But I think for Howard knew and could see the dynamics just by working, you know, for as long as he had up until that point. And he kind of like hovered around me and was like played protector a little bit. Because there's times on that record where, like, You're Not Alone is the best example of all time. Like, we had that song. We had everything but the bridge.
Wow.
And musically, it was done. It was like, we knew there was going to be a bridge part, but we needed these few parts to know what the bridge was going to sound like. And so the day before we're supposed to go in and start tracking that song, Bo and Chris go in one room, and I like lock myself in this closet that I was sharing a room with Alex, and Alex had left. So it was me just living in this huge room with this giant closet. And so I locked myself in this closet and was like, I'm going to finish this song. So I ended up writing the first verse and the chorus, sent it to Howard, or tried to send it to Howard, but needed Bo's help, so I couldn't. I couldn't do
it.
You're trying to go behind enemy lines.
Yeah. I was like, how do I submit this without doing it? So I called Howard and was like, hey, man, I have this cool melody and stuff, but I've recorded it. I can bring it in like super early before the studio, or before we all show up to the studio. I'll just like drive in early and give it to you. He's like, no, just come in at like 7 and let's just track what you have and see what's up.
Wow.
And so everybody was like scheduled to come in at 9:30.
Feel like you're like betraying them? Or like,
hell yeah, dog.
Oh shit, I'm cheating on Bo.
Straight up, I was like, I felt like I was doing something super
naughty.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Howard, we finish it by like 9. The band gets in it. I leave, go get coffee, whatever, kind of disappear for a second, show up a little bit later, you know, and Howard stayed in his little room and just like edited what we had done. And the band got there. They were sitting in there. I get there. Everybody's like, what's up? Where'd you go this morning? Like, oh, dude, I just want to get coffee and sat in Starbucks or whatever, you know, just fuck it off. And Howard goes, all right, you guys ready? And I'm like,
you're
all right, here
fucking
we go.
Sweating bullets.
Sweating bullets, yeah. Dude. We go into this like little control room, and he's like, all right, so what do you guys got for this You're Not Alone song? And like Bo like pulls out his laptop and like turns it around, and you can see all the files and shit up on his computer. And I'm like, they're going to notice. They're going to notice everything. Didn't notice. And he goes, well, actually, I don't need to hear it. Here's your song. And he like, hit space bar. And
you're
again, one of those moments where I was like, I needed that. I needed that like win, and not over them, just like for yourself.
Yeah, it wasn't
myself.
About them. Yeah, yeah. It was,
you know, and Howard gave me, like, that's what I'm talking about, like with Howard. It was like, he gave me that win and was just like, no, I don't need to hear your shit. Cause this dude just wrote like your fucking song.
It's the fucking part.
You
yeah.
know, like, yeah. like this song is going to sell you a million copies. That's literally what he said to us. And before anybody could fight it, he just kicked everybody out and was like, Cove, get up in the booth. Let's get back to work on this song.
So which specific part did you and Howard work on?
Is this the chorus, you said?
First verse.
You said bridge too, or?
Well, they needed the bridge.
So it was just, yeah, we needed the bridge, but it was the first verse and the chorus. Like we had
banging
through the end of the chorus, because there's no real like pre-chorus. I mean, there kind of is, but it was already all worked out. And yeah.
So what did dudes think when he was like, check out what
they
you
were
did?
Just like, where does this come from? And when did you do this? And you know, it was like this. I was just like in my corner, like, you know, I had this idea,
fucking
but
come
I
in and wrote some
it.
Smashing shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's just that whole record was just like us fighting tooth and nail to make the best record in whatever way that we possibly could.
But I think you
could.
Can hear that.
And oh, absolutely.
Whatever you break down, like I can hear it in the drums. I can hear it in the guitars. I can hear it in the vocals. Like I can hear it in the song structure. Like there is, any of those songs, you never ever think, oh, that could have been way sicker.
Yeah, I was kind of lazy.
That could have been way sicker.
Yeah.
You don't have that factor with that record. So you get done with the record. You guys are done tracking. What is the time gap between, okay, record's done,
mm-hmm.
and we have to leave to go play all these songs for a couple of years? It was pretty soon, wasn't it?
Like a month.
Yeah,
month
okay.
and a half.
Yuck, dude.
And then you're just gone.
Yeah, and it was gone. I gained so much weight that I didn't fit in any of my pants because we were all in sweats the whole time filming and recording this record. Because Howard Benson was in sweats the whole time. We were like, well, if he's going to be in sweats, then I'm going to be in sweats.
Am I wearing leg prisons? Yeah, dude. I'm going to wear some.
Chris gave me one pair of pants. I turned them into shorts, and I wore those for like a week, like 10 days on Warped Tour, and then I was back into all my sweats. Not my sweats. Back into all my other pants because I was sweating so much. I lost
water
so much weight. Just like,
let's go.
Immediately. but you know, it was like, immediate, it was gone, and then.
And you're basically touring for
2.5 years. I would come home for like 10 days, a week here. I think the longest that we had off in like 2 years was like a month, maybe 40 days. Like it was bonkers that whole time.
So you go from having never played a show to joining a favorite beloved band of yours, like you were a fan before.
Yeah. My favorite band at that time.
You then go from that to touring, recording a record, and then back to touring more. Did you, what was that adjustment when you would come home like? Was it just a, oh God,
relief,
I'm trying to catch
like
my breath? Or was it you were young and just going, woo?
Oh, it was just call Joey and be like, yo, come over to my house. like
unbelievable
sleepovers, dude. We're hanging out for the next 7 days. You're mine. Like we're just gonna go run amok, you know. Like
right,
it's on me, you know. Like we just, I would obviously, you know, try to catch up, but there was so little time, and everybody's lives were just like happening,
right?
You know that like you would try to get in as many hangs as you could. But the reality was just like, I'm gone, you know, like I'm just,
yep.
Forget about me. And then when I get home, I'll call you, You know what I'm saying? Like, don't stress about trying to reach out or anything like that. Like,
I'm gone.
I mean, yeah, I'm just doing this. So, it was a little, I don't want to say like rough to adapt to it, because everybody that I was friends with, I'm still friends with to this day.
Right.
And so I knew who was going to stick around. You know what I mean?
So the transition, so you go on tour, and then when does the second record start happening, as far as you're thinking about, that's time to start writing for a record, it's time to, like, what is that transition like, going from one extreme to another, right? So now you're touring for years on end, and now you come home, you have to make another record. How is that process different than what it was before? So now you have some confidence, presumably, like you've done a ton of shows at this point. Like,
yeah,
you've played so many shows. I'm guessing you vocally kind of found yourself, like you got comfortable with yourself vocally, maybe. And then it's time to record a second record. How's that go?
Spaghetti breakfast.
Best.
Were you spaghetti breakfast back then?
Oh, spaghetti breakfast.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So 2.5 years of touring, 2 years of touring, whatever it was. Our label fell apart.
Yep.
First single. We didn't have anybody that we signed to. Everybody was gone. It was either go back and make a new record or tour this record into the ground, and we decided the latter. So we toured this record into the ground. And at the end of that cycle, spaghetti pasta,
yeah,
brains. At the end of that cycle, things were said that didn't need to be said, and my life changed pretty dramatically at the end of that cycle.
Can we get into that?
I mean, it's now looking back, it's like, oh, I was just a young kid who didn't know how to, like,
sure,
talk through it. I didn't know.
You don't have those tools yet.
Yeah, I was like still learning these dudes that I was with, you know,
right.
And like a big part of the difference between, like, there was a lot of differences between us, and I think at that time it was like sole focus on those differences. And I think there was a lot of toxicity that was, like, sure, happening, because we were also, like, you know, touring.
Oh, yeah.
You tour for 2 years. You tour for like 6 weeks, bro. And you're in a van together.
Of course. You're married, like, married to those people. You have a relationship with,
bro,
all those fucking
and
people.
You're not married
up
to those people.
Yes, exactly.
You're like living on top of those people.
100%.
Like, my sweat is your sweat. Like, that, it just, there is no,
right,
there is no individual sweat. Right. It's now our sweat.
I think I saw all of your poop.
It's, bro,
all my band members' poops. Like, oh, that's, yeah, how
you see,
yeah,
all,
oh,
of,
yeah,
it.
All of it.
And so it just, I think, at that time, again, it was like, I was riding probably the biggest high that we, like, cause we were finishing this tour or that cycle on, like, one of the biggest tours we had ever,
you guys,
done,
did insane things on that album cycle.
Oh, dude.
Insane things. And
the numbers are, yeah,
it was,
it's wild.
The accomplishments are,
yeah,
crazy. But you also don't have the advantage of, you know, your band members, you didn't grow up with them. You haven't known them since you were,
no,
five, right? So there is that, what I like to call, like, they're your work buddies. So they're your, not extended family, but it's in the way of, like, the siblings. They argue, there's a push-pull there,
yeah,
right?
I looked at him more as like my older brothers.
Yeah.
You know, as the older brothers that I never had. So to hear some of the things that were said to me were said in the conversation.
Right.
I like, just like blacked out, just, you know.
Sure.
And that, from like that point on, it was just like, what do I do? you know?
And like, you were like, I'm going to get dreadlocks. That's what I'm going to do.
I'm just going to do this to everybody.
And there's nowhere to go. I know what you mean. Like, you, there's like, well, where the fuck? I turn around.
You get mad.
Like, well, yeah, I just, I got mad, but I also was like, I was like, you know, at the same time, trying to figure out how to deal with it all and clearly not dealing with it properly. Like, I like hid. If you were a Seosin fan and you saw me leading like at any point on that record cycle, it was like I'm there hanging from like the time I get to the venue to the time that I either have to leave the venue or you get so tired that you leave.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that was my mentality, and that's been my mentality for touring. So my who I was at the time changed, and I just like stopped hanging out. I wouldn't hang out as much.
Disconnected.
I just kind of like disconnected from everything. And, you know, we had a couple tours after that, you know, not, you know, the Gray EP. Yep. So we did like the same type of thing. We toured the Gray EP, see what people thought. And if you listen to Seosin LP1, my whole thought process for that record was like, you have everybody in the genre doing this, like, no hope, all hope is gone, you know,
downtrodden.
Yeah. And my whole thought process for that record, I was like, I'm not that dude. I'm a happy, positive dude, you know, and I don't want to, I'm not going to swear on this record, because my mom will kill me. And, you know, I want to write a record that is hopeful. And I want to tour, when I tour that record and I tour with them, I want to make sure that I'm doing things for the fan that my favorite singers did for me, or my favorite bands
for
me.
Yeah.
You know, that's amazing. And, you know, if I didn't meet a singer, I'd be like, I'm going to do the opposite of what that guy did.
Straight up, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I made myself accessible. And then if you listen to In Search of Solid Ground, hence the whole, like, what am I doing with my life and with this? Where is this going? Who am I? It was less hopeful. It was more like,
that's where you're at.
Stories of like my life and situations that I like didn't feel were right. So on my own, you know, the whole chorus, can I make it on my own? Like,
right.
I'm literally questioning if I can just like leave this shit and like make it on my own. Right. You know, like it's very like,
oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that literally. Like, yeah, I tried so hard.
Favorite song that Seosin has ever put out is like, it fits in this whole perspective that I had of like the whole, you know, when the clock came about, I was like, perfect. Yeah. Like, time's running out and it's just, it is what it is. You know, like I knew it. I knew what was going to happen. Right. I just didn't know how it was going to happen.
That's a good insight and like lyrically into that record.
I'm gonna go re-listen to that.
That record
is that fucker all the
really
time.
Deep, so, bro. Like,
it's so good. It's so like,
Best of Me is like one of my favorite Seosin songs ever.
Yeah, that I love that song. Fireflies is one of those songs where it was like, again, I said it after the departure. It was like, if there's a way that I could leave a band, it would be with Fireflies.
Yeah,
like that. If that's the last thing that anybody heard from me and Seosin, fine with that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So I kind of like, I feel like they saw it coming through that record. I saw it coming through that record, but it was just like, let's see.
They saw it coming through. You said or no?
I feel like they had to. Because I was more like,
if you're serving up those lyrics,
bro, I was way more like,
yeah,
up like, just when I go to Buzz, I'd be like, I don't care that I'm singing this in front of you, like in my head.
Just so
like,
beautiful about that, though.
Yeah, it's very exposing, and I would just kind of express myself to them through that.
That's the fucking purpose of creating shit, though. Like,
it was hard, though. It was hard because it was I didn't want it to be that way. I wanted it to be more like, because I was being more like, or less ambiguous and just more straight to the point. Mm-hmm. I was hoping, I guess, that there would be like some type of just anything conversational, you know, that could have just been that Howard type of situation where it was like one of you guys just stood up, you know, stood up for me type thing, or made me feel like that. But yeah, it that record is fire. Like,
we talk about it all, like,
is it real
all the time on tour, dude? That is the most underrated fucking
the long
like,
drives. We would the record we would bump. We'd
just from top to bottom, be like, just run the whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love that song. I thought off of that record, and I fought like hell, and I'm so glad that that record ended the way that it did, because I fought like hell for Why Can't You See to be the first single off that record, and I loved that song. I thought that song was like one of the more catchy like Seosin songs that had ever been written, because it was just a cruise, perfect cruiser, and less like it was out of the box, because it didn't have the
riffy,
the
little
cool
guys,
riffy,
yeah.
But it was just like, all right, cool, we can move it in this direction. And then it was like, all right, Seosin is officially redheaded stepchildren of Virgin Records, because we're the adopted child from Capitol. So it just became this like weird, just butt heads of like, you don't have the single yet. You don't have the single yet.
Do you think
there were so many singles?
Yeah,
in
it was so
that.
Many
dude,
singles.
It was all singles.
Yeah,
it was so good.
They were just longer songs. Like, we just took more liberties.
Yeah.
In the songwriting department, in like the song structure department rather, and did things that were more for that, like potentially for the live show.
Dude, it was, you know? Trajectory wise, I think it was like a perfect articulation for you guys. Like, a couple little riffy songs in there, but like you're saying, like little cruisers.
Yeah.
All of them are like that, where it's just like the whole way through.
Do you think, looking back now, your feelings and how you felt about the entire situation was exacerbated by the go, go, go nature of the entire industry at that time? Because clearly you guys were still feeling some kind of pressure to, okay, we got to go to this record. Now we got to go back out on the road and play all these shows and stuff like that. What if you were able to have just taken a break at that time?
I thought we were. I thought after that whole cycle, we were just going to come home. I was going to do the same thing that we did, you know, when we come home.
Take a month.
Yeah.
You don't see anybody, talk to anybody, and then you
I'm
reconvene.
I'm not talking to you until I like have to see you the day before we leave for practice. Like, I don't need to see you.
Totally.
I don't need your sweat on me. I don't need your scent on me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go home, and I want to be excited to come back and like see you again. And I need to like miss you.
You need to create that longing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think every band kind of needs that, especially if you tour as hard and nasty as Seosin toured. But, you know, the thing about it is, like, we kind of, like, made it harder on ourselves in ways. And it didn't need to be so difficult, you know? Like, I am a singer, and so my piece of gear and my knowledge of stuff is insignificant. I carry a microphone.
Right.
My whole purpose is to live life and then write about it.
Fucking lucky.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's right.
That's literally, I don't play guitar, I don't write songs.
You convert your
life
experiences into things that people can sing along.
Yeah.
Sing along to.
And so I need time like that to gather myself, because I just spent 2 years of my life solely focused on one, that first record, and I have lived a crazy experience.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's stuff to write about, but a band writing a song about being on the road all the time, like, or a record about it, like, no, bro.
Bon Jovi's already done that.
Yeah, or about just like, yeah, that's just stupid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I needed the, I needed more life experience, I felt like. So I came home off of the second record,
mm-hmm.
being like, I just need to like get Seosin out of my head, because anytime I think about it, I think about the worst things.
Totally. It becomes, you know, an overtly negative thing.
Oh, massively negative thing. Yeah.
You didn't
want to
turn that into an evil thing. So you're like,
no, it didn't. It was either going to on a third record, or it was right. just going to end in like the most gnarly fashion where yeah. like I just explode and become a person that I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, and then that just doesn't ever look good on
you don't want to put that out there.
No, on the situation, even potentially if there could be anything in the future, like I was I would say it anytime they get asked, like, oh, you know, if COVID quit, who would sing, you know? Like, it was kind of like this bit, like I would just follow Anthony's suit for you know what I'm right. saying, and Bo is like, I would, and I'd be like, no, the band would die. Like, it would either die or Anthony has to come back, you know? Yeah. And so I feel like, again, it was...
It's kind of an acid trippy dream, Bo singing yeah. for Seosin.
Yeah.
Right? But he crushes, yes. though.
He's a great vocalist.
Bro, he's singing on all the new like, Taylor's version of Seosin's self-titled that we're retracking.
Like, singing?
He's singing harmonies, like...
Yeah.
He's always ripped the harmonies, though.
Bro, not you'd okay.
No, it's gonna be
save it.
You'd I'm be stoked. Surprised. I'm you'd be surprised at how many harmonies were sung and who sang them.
Like, I love
it's
that.
A big it's, setup. I'm stoked.
That's a big nugget, bro.
We tracked for that Howard Benson record. We tracked so many vocals, like so many vocals. I would hit harmonies. Chris would come up. He'd hit harmonies. Bo would come up, he'd hit harmonies, and nobody knew what was happening because we'd all get in there.
Right.
Again, I knew what I would
like. Which
I would
is gonna land?
Sort
like,
it later.
But yeah. he would track me to then track Bo, Chris, and Justin, and the stacking and whose parts are what. Like, that record is just littered with all of our voices.
You can hear the time
beautiful.
Spent on all of those things,
dude,
though.
It's
like,
so,
that's
so
what you're
cool.
hearing. That was the yeah. difference between that and anything else that was coming yeah. out at that time.
So I know Howard, we're jumping around.
Was Howard like not letting you guys know his process, like what was going on? He'd just be like, this is happening now.
Bro, he
was it just like Inspector Gadget?
Go hit that harmony.
Straight up. Yeah, he had.
And at the end, he'd be like, Mike, spacebar, and you'd be like, oh, yeah. that's what we all just did?
So he had straight, yes.
Really?
Yeah, so
what?
I.
So strange.
We would do songs, and like after the first three songs of drums were done, Howard and I just bailed. And then it was just Mike and the four of mm-hmm. them doing music. And then anytime we get a new one or finish one, he would just cycle it
wow.
through. And so we would start, it was a factory, dude. It was
that's
just
amazing.
Like this revolving door of like, all right, drums are done. Get it to the editor. We're already tracking vocals. Get it to the editor. Mm-hmm. Now we've got track, you know, edited
we're just
drums
talking
and
about,
vocals.
It's like how Feldman does it, literally
right.
on the spot.
Dude, it's
just like
insane. Yeah. You just yeah. pass it along and then keep moving, keep
There's
moving.
There's something to it. I mean,
It efficient. Works and it's efficient, and I think the problem with Seosin and with a lot of artists is finishing.
And getting like, it over the finish line.
Getting over well, just yeah, getting over the finish line. But when it comes to music, finishing the song, finishing it, just
yeah.
finish, just say that it's done. Like you have. The recording process, you have the mixing process,
yep.
you have the mastering process. And some people go through 50 different mixers.
That's just fucking
you're right.
musicians though, dude. Like people are
bro, that's you just
I know.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's
but at what point
are
you gonna be like, yo, the spaghetti's yeah. done.
Yeah. It's
we don't need
done.
Another cheese. Yeah.
You're not gonna record anymore.
Yeah.
You're not gonna do anything. Just pick a guy and go with it. And that's how I feel like a lot of people's problems and what took Seosin so long was like just finding that guy with Howard Benson. And then even after that, it was just finishing it and having that like deadline and we have the ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like Bo can record, mix, and master.
Yes.
In his garage.
Very well so.
In his parents' garage.
Yes.
He doesn't need a $30,000 or $300,000 studio or $1.5 million studio in Malibu with a view to like track something that's going to sound
as good as
something that's going to be side by side with it on the radio. You know what I'm saying? Just get to that point. Yes. And once it's done, be done. Put it out. Because you're gonna sit on it and you're gonna be like, oh well, we gotta like set it up, you know, and that's gonna take time to figure out a music video of this and this and that. And it's like if the mentality back then could have been that, and if we could have had the ability just to be like, you know what? I don't know what's best, but I like this enough just to say go. As a band, we wouldn't have had to have gotten to Howard, and we probably would have put out 5 or 6 records since that time.
Right.
And I'm glad that we didn't, because I feel like I can look at it now and just be like, hell yeah. Like we're doing sick numbers.
Yeah.
Considering that like the band doesn't really do anything and hasn't really done anything of like being a band significance in a while. And if you don't want to do that, there's ways of still being a band and saying yes a few times. And I feel like,
of course,
that's kind of the position where the band is at right now, is like, let's just say yes when it's appropriate.
When it makes sense
to say yes for all of us.
Yes.
You know, we'll throw it in the group text and check the calendar and make sure everybody's Google calendars are all perfect. Uh-huh. And if they line up, they line up. And if they don't, we just say no.
That's you know so what simple.
I mean? I think if that could have been the mentality at the time, it would have obviously boosted, and there wouldn't have been as many problems, but just like getting to the finish line on a lot of things. We're at that time, we're just like so many roadblocks and road bumps and little things that, and big things that happen, you know, again, losing your label, like saying no to a melody is not as significant as that, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Or, just, there's just a lot of like weird little things that the music industry back then was like, at least in our case, being on a major record label, it was more like board meetings and gotta have a plan and gotta have assets and gotta make sure that there's a 6-month timeline. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they're putting bus ads out.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Of
like,
course.
Like, if you're doing stuff like that, like you need a long time
Big
for
ramp.
Marketing, you know?
Long ramp, yeah.
So it just, I don't know. Like, I think it got to the point where I kind of, at the end, I didn't care about it. I was just like, what am I going to go do? Write another song for this record label, and I'm just like, whatever. And then everything kind of just like worked out where it was like clean separation, you know, separation on like the business side of things.
Everything is just
and then on my personal side of things. And it was just like these nice little things that happened. And I was like,
kiss,
all right.
So how do you go from, so connect the dots for me. How do you go from what you just said about like bus ads and these major label meeting rooms and all that stuff? You take a whole bunch of time off and then you basically kind of go back to your roots with that American, and it's the polar opposite. It couldn't be further from business-wise, at least. Like obviously you guys aren't on a major label, but you also seem to operate it much differently than anything was operated back in the day as far as sales and goes and all that kind of stuff. And it seems way more, I don't know, not, I guess punk rock is the way I would describe it, but it's definitely more like, listen, we're going to do when we want to do it. And we're going to have a lot of, it's about having fun and getting that kind of spark back, I guess is the way, yeah, I would put it. How do you get from, what is the process of getting from that and taking a break from all of that and it just parting ways and then getting it back into it again?
So I stopped listening to music, one, for like 7 years.
This is post-separation.
Yeah. Literally the day that they came over, I like kind of stopped listening to music. I like didn't care.
Was it a subconscious choice or were you just like, I've just got to disconnect from everything?
I mean, I already like listening to like talk radio and like,
sure,
podcasts,
yeah,
were booming at that time. So yeah, I was just like, I'll just keep going down that rabbit hole of things that I love. Like I would drive in my car, pizza delivery, just listening to talk radio. Like I didn't have a CD player in my car. It was just talk radio. I don't want to listen to the radio because radio sucks, you know, wow, rather listen to people talk. Anyways. So I just stopped listening to music. Nobody was showing me anything cool. And then a buddy of mine who linked me up with Joey in high school, when Joey entered high school, our buddy Jordan, Jordan introduced me to a friend of his in a way that was hilarious. That was like, hey man, write a song over this. And I was like, this is too cool to be Jordan's music. Like, whose music is this? So I sent him a song like in like an hour. Of me just yelling. I was like, he's gonna hate this. I'm like, this will get him off my back, you know.
He's like, I fucking love this, yeah, dude.
And he's like, bro, I sent this to the guy who wrote it, he loves it. And I found out that the guy who wrote it when he was 14. And I was like, bro, if you wrote that when you were 14, what are you writing now? Like, send me some stuff.
Yeah.
So he sent me a few more songs, and Dead American was just kind of birthed over the phone between like emails, and nothing really like happened for a long time. We had 5-6 songs demoed, but we didn't record it or anything.
Well, it was pretty organic.
What's the year?
Yeah, it was super organic. This is 2016.
Okay.
Maybe 2017.
This is like the inception of like,
yeah, I was still like kind of messing around with music. I would do Patriot, and Patriot was just me and Kyle Rosa, who is an insane drummer.
Yep.
I went to high school with. He played in Atreyu. We had this project that was kind of like more instrumental or electronic and R&B-ish. It was like white boy R&B. And I was still doing music writing. I never stopped writing, but it was like I just stopped listening and caring about music. And then when Chad entered, I started caring more about it, but I didn't really care enough to like start a band. And then finally he was like, I'm just going to do this. So
what was the tipping point where you were like, what was the tipping point where you're like, all right, I'm going to fucking do this.
I think once I moved out of Utah, like I moved up to Utah for about 8-9 months. And then I got fired from a job, and Chad was living up there, and he was like, I need to get out of Utah. And so moving to California was what did it. It was like, all right, cool, I got a friend in California.
You guys dipped together, you and Chad did?
Yeah. He's like, I got a friend, wow, in California who needs a roommate, so we're all gonna move in together. My brother's gonna come, and it will be, you know, all four of us living together, you know. Cool. So we moved out.
You're like, dude, I've lived with fucking 60s before, this is nothing.
Yeah,
dude, I don't know. I'm so grateful that things have worked out the way that they have, because it just didn't, like, Chad allowed me just to be myself. I'm going to have to leave pretty soon here. I'm super sorry. I have a baby appointment. Finding out
baby.
A lot today. So Chad was really a critical person in my life that like, he allowed me the freedom and just kept saying yes. And was just like, yes, keep going. Yes, keep going. Yes, keep going.
That was what you needed right then. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. He writes dope stuff, and he likes my ideas. Like, I want to keep working with this guy. So we recorded The Shape of Punk is Dumb, and in like 2017, put it out in 2018.
Fuck, was that 6 years
end
ago?
End of 2018.
Yeah. That was the first time I talked to him. Was he hit me up on Instagram. I was like, hey, dude, can you check out my album and like share it around? Because you were just going around to people like, hey, check this out. Like, I'm doing a thing again. I was like,
we'll talk
what?
About this afterwards. But what? Yeah, it's
amazing.
It blew my mind, the reaction that got. And again, just one of those like, oh, okay, like maybe this is a realistic thing. You know, like maybe this could be like a realistic thing again. And not that I like wanted to, but I knew that with the people that we were connecting ourselves with at that time of like playing our first show and, you know, like we played our first show, we knew our booking agent and we knew that we were going to sign to his label once his label was off the ground. Like I knew that, you know, like it once we kind of like saw that end goal, we were like, oh, okay, cool, 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 cool. And then COVID.
Yep.
know about that.
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, what happened? What happened?
Hey, I'm going to take this wrench. I'm going to put it in your fucking bike spokes where you're going 100 miles an hour. Yep. Yeah.
That was a fantastic time. But I don't know. I think through that time, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about like what I was capable of, and even though it was like I wasn't able to necessarily do all of the things that I loved, I was like optimistic for the first time in like a very long time, considering.
That's beautiful,
right? Like it's everybody was super downtrodden, and like we're all broke as shit, but at the same time it was like, all right, we're all in this together. And in my head I was just like, you know what, I'm just gonna take this time in the same way that I would have liked to have taken certain time, and just kind of like assess and like reset and see what is out there, because nobody's able to do it. When shit comes back, like Who knows what can happen in this life?
You know? The bow's drawn back. You're like, all right.
Yeah.
We're cocked.
And I mean, we're all shooting at the same target now, you know? And that's how
the bar is fucking lit. Yeah.
Like the opportunities to do cool stuff became available, you know? Like doing even as cheesy as it is, like doing like crossover merch with Seosin and Dead American was like something that
amazing.
That was super fun for me as like the guy, you know.
Yeah.
It was like I'm able to kind of like rip on myself in a way that like I do rip on myself, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's fun.
It was a good time. So having fun and doing this again, I think they saw me doing it. I did Scary Kids, and I think when, you know, 20 year happened with this, you know, this past year, I think a lot of things were just kind of like realigning for us to be able to like chat it out in the way that needed to happen.
Yeah.
And so those conversations like happened, and I think it's a beautiful story in the long run. Like we were all kind of able to step back out and look at it, I think, over COVID a little bit more, because they put out that record before COVID with Anthony. And I think being able to step out of it and not be able to do it, get it cut off, like we're able to kind of like see the bigger picture for what it is and understand that like nobody cares anymore,
right?
You know, like nobody gives a shit anymore. Like we're too old to be dealing with this.
There's beauty in that though. Not giving a fuck. That's Joey's MO.
Yeah,
100%. Like look where it got him, dude. Like
100%. And again, like I said at the beginning, it's like if you molded me and I'm the way I am at right now, which is that same mentality, like who gives a shit? You know, like I love Anthony as a human, like regardless of whether or not he's playing with Seosin or Circa or Ellis Tunes or doing a solo thing. It's like, I just love that dude as an individual, you know? I want to see him successful, and I would say he would say the same thing 100% about me.
He would, for sure.
You know? And so for all of us, it's like, I think we all kind of just want that for each other. And because of that, like, Seosin doesn't, and it no longer feels like, oh, this is my band, you know, like it's our band, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it's all of ours. Like we all did this together.
It's everybody's pizza.
Like, bro, this is the best pizza of 100%. All time because we share it together.
It's everybody's breakfast spaghetti, dude. 100%.
Breakfast spaghetti is fire.
And on that note,
yeah,
Cove.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you. I've had it. I don't really. I like to talk, but
we're glad you like.
Thank
to talk.
You for talking at us.
We don't like to talk.
Yeah.
But it. I think people. Again, maybe this started before we were talking. Like the mystery that surrounds Seosin is
the
like,
lore. Yeah.
And the lore is so cool, and I think to kind of like allow people kind of like an insight to it at all is needed in a time kind of like this where you know,
yeah,
we don't use social media, and so to be able to like be given this opportunity to talk to both of you,
disseminate
and to be able to show some information to people, I think is the coolest thing, because it just hasn't, it doesn't happen with Seosin. And with my life, I'm like, I got Dead American this year, I got Seosin that came out, you know, today of recording, we got Sleepers
totally.
Translating Live that just came out today, I got La Tired coming up on the first of every month, we got a song that's dropping. Like my life is this year, not even knowing it, I planning this, it's just like, it's the coolest thing to be able to like make this reappearance with Seosin and do all of these fun shows singing that record, and be able to play, you know, all of the songs that I got to play for the time that I was in the band, and just share them with people who never got to see the band, or maybe there's some like young kids of fans, you know, that never got to see us either. And I think that's like, that us coming back and doing something like we definitely would like, I would definitely like the opportunity to showcase this 4.0 version of Seosin to as many people that didn't get to see us play or me play, almost 20 years ago. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So,
thank you on behalf of all of the fans. Yeah. Thank you so much,
no, bro. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. And this is fun.
Thanks for hanging, dude.
Yeah. Thank you.